the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back and go!
Welcome to Walk It Off. I'm Dani Wexelman with Ashley Chavez, but we have a really exciting guest today. Woo! Jill Stakovitz. She is at Major League Soccer, but she's also been with Major League Baseball for a really long time. So, Jill, thank you for being with us today.
No, don't thank me. I'm so excited to be here. They never let me in here before. So
we're letting you in with open arms.
Like I told you, I pretty much had to sneak back in.
You know what? I'm happy to help you sneak back into this place.
Yes.
We have some really exciting things to talk about, and we definitely do not cover soccer the way that it should. We do not cover football the way that it should be covered here. And I know Ashley's really excited. Foosball. Gemma, we're sorry that you aren't here today.
Yeah. I know, Gemma.
Yes, but we're really excited to have Jill. So I think that it's finally time to give soccer the credit that it deserves. And we're going to be talking about a couple of different reasons why people are watching it a lot more and the sport is growing so much. There are really interesting points to be made and why soccer is making its presence known. It's growing astronomically. So we're going to jump in first to the growth of Major League Soccer. So I have a list of reasons, and we're going to pick some specific ones. So expansion, more teams in more cities. Facilities are fantastic. They're really upgrading those, and they're trying to compete with the other big four sports. Youth, which is a huge thing we're going to talk about. TV time, safety, gender, and affordability.
Yeah, affordability, it's funny. That, I think, is one that hasn't been talked about or studied as much. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, you know, you can go to an MLS game. Anyone can bring their whole family to an MLS game, and you can park. You
know, parking.
Oh, man.
It's funny we start with it because it's the least important as to why it's grown, but it's a great park. Yeah. For friends of mine who are in their 30s, they bring their young families, and not everyone can afford to go to a baseball game or a football game, you know? The Minnesota Vikings were just anywhere near the East Coast. So we looked it up, Washington Redskins. It would have cost my family $120 a person. We didn't go.
Yeah.
Football's nuts.
That's not the case, though, with soccer, and I think that's great.
They're asking you to basically pay your arm to watch any other sport, but soccer, I think they've got the right thing going, and that is why numbers are growing. Jill, you have some of those numbers?
Yeah, so what we were talking a little bit about before is 3 million kids play youth soccer.
3 million.
More kids are playing, a million more kids are playing soccer than they are baseball and softball.
Okay.
Because obviously you got to bring both genders into that. So you look at the numbers and you think, well, those kids are now becoming 20-somethings, 30-somethings, people who are spending money, people who are going to be going online a lot, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that's why it's grown so much. More kids are playing soccer than they were playing baseball. And I think that's probably the biggest reason.
And we all played, and you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So we played, and now we're the ones going to watch. And Ashley, you're a huge fan.
Yes.
Not necessarily of just MLS, but also.
Correct. Well, I am a Bundesliga fan, and I a Dortmund fan specifically. And when I decided that I wanted to get into soccer, because it is such a fun game, I went to a game, which I want to like talk about that for a second. I went to a game with one of our good friends, Sean Kippens, shout out. It was at MetLife, and it was so much fun to watch live, which is, to me, the opposite of football. Football, to me, watching live is just a chore. It's an absolute chore. And watching soccer is one, it just continues. Like, you have your 2 seconds to get a beer before you miss anything, which is wonderful. But it's constantly going on, and the game is a lot easier to consume while you're actually there, which I think draws a lot of people to want to go as well. Just like baseball. Baseball is fun to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Hockey is fun to be there. You get to experience so much more than just watching on TV. Football's the opposite. So I think that helps soccer a lot too. But getting back to that point, when I got into soccer, I wanted something – established, and we had read in one of the articles that you sent us, the Forbes article, it had mentioned that a lot of people chose MLS because they felt like they had some ownership with it because it was new.
Really,
and I didn't know, I didn't necessarily want that. So I was on the other side of things. I want something established and almost ancient, so I could like follow this like crazy like timeline of how these teams were and like how people like grew up with these teams instead of having something new. But I love that millennials are as if I'm not a millennial. I'm like damn smack in the middle of being a millennial. But a lot of people do want that ownership, and I think that really drives them and creates like this amazing fan base.
You mentioned millennials. They know that that's – advertisers know that's where the money is. 65% of people who consume MLS are like 17 or 18 to 35.
Yeah, right.
It's the prime demographic.
I mean, it's everyone's dream.
And like you said, now I've gone all over the country this year going to different games, and I've learned a lot. I mean, a ton. And I was part of a series where we – kind of dove into the supporters, which I also learned, like, they're supporters. They're not technically fans. Yeah, yeah, they're supporters.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And they are the most passionate fan bases I've ever seen. I mean, I went out to Portland, Oregon, which I know Sports Illustrated did an article on the Timbers Army, which is their group. And it was my first time covering an MLS game outside of something Red Bulls or NYCFC here in New York. But I was blown away. It was a regular season game. And I mean, there was green smoke. There was yellow smoke. There was millions of flags. And the chanting, singing, cheering, it didn't stop for 90 minutes. Like, I thought it was like what they do for the intros. And I was just totally blown away. And that's where it really separates itself from other sports, I think. You know, you can't beat the energy at the Garden for Knicks playoffs. Been a while, but I was covered it once. Rangers, it's been a bunch of times. So yeah. I'd say it matches there. But again, I'm talking regular season.
Yeah, every week
regular season. You know, if your team makes the playoffs, you're playing 10 months.
Oh, my God.
So it's a long season, and they're out there. You know, I've been in Seattle a lot the past couple weeks. They're out there in the rain, it's freezing, and they are nonstop just jumping and singing.
So those stories of the support and those videos, you would never see that at a baseball game, ever. You would never see a huge, giant group of people so organized, so committed, like they're tailgating, they're chanting, they're, you know, I think that the only time I've ever seen that is maybe college basketball. And watching, like, college kids in America.
It's the youth, I think.
Yeah, organize it. You wouldn't see that at football because, A, you might not see it, and you definitely wouldn't hear it.
Yeah.
And hockey, I feel like that's just not – it's not feasible. This is, like, something so signature and niche for them, and that's what brings in the younger people or even people who are maybe a little bit older than that age group, and they feel like they can be a part of something. You're a part of the team.
Exactly.
Like you said, like you Ashley made this great point, like you feel like you have a stake in that team because they're so new and they don't have this ancient history. So you are a part of their story, and you really like own that. It's unbelievable.
And the interesting part about it to me is like, it's not necessarily community service, even though I did meet some supporter groups who like that's their thing.
Right.
But it is a big part in the fact that like these people do things together. They hang out during the week. They have like Wednesday night this.
Imagine that.
And like one of the Seattle groups, not the prime group, Emerald City, but Gorilla FC, which is one of the groups. It's like the third tier, I think, or third biggest.
Third fan tier?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle's got like a whole...
I know Seattle is nothing.
Well, they're very divided because they have a very intense group, and then some people... That's Emerald City, and then some people don't want to do that. So they have like maybe slightly...
Amazing. Yeah. Wait, this is way more than I thought we were going
to. And when I got to Seattle, he was like, oh, okay, well, we're doing street soccer Seattle in the morning, and then we're going to the bar, and then we're going to the game. They were playing soccer with a group that battles homelessness in the morning. That helps these people that are battling homelessness. And, like, is drinking involved? Yes. I mean, I've been at tailgates with Beer Olympics and the whole thing. And not that these people in Seattle weren't drinking, but at, like, 10 a.m., they were volunteering. And then they were drinking. And then at 7, we were at the game. So, I mean, it's just, it really is more like a way of life than just a fandom.
It's a great way of putting it.
And that's the part that blew me away because I really had no clue.
That's awesome.
So since working with MLS, Jill, what's been the best part? Obviously you were in baseball and you cover hockey and basketball, mm-hmm. and now you've got soccer. So what's been the best part?
That's a good question because honestly, MLS, I still love baseball and I love hockey. You know, I go to hockey games whenever I can. But the thing that I've noticed the most is there's still a lot to be done in MLS that's been done in the NHL and in baseball, forget it. You know, in the NFL, you're not going to break any new ground in terms of like a question you're going to ask or anything like that. But in MLS, sometimes you're dealing with guys who haven't really been interviewed before. Mm-hmm. Sure, there's huge stars on some teams, but right. the typical, the you know, starting 11 is not all big names. There's a big name or two.
Yeah.
But you're dealing with guys and you're going to a club with an idea, you're going to the PR staff with an idea that they haven't done yet. So there's still a lot to be done, which
really exciting,
definitely presents its challenges. It sounds exciting, and don't get me wrong, it is. It is. It's fun. Yeah. And MLS is great about, they know that they're all about millennials. So, like, everyone from the executives, everyone at MLS is all about kind of giving you, like, sure, give it a try. That's always the answer. Yeah. How on That's the flip magical. Side, it's very hard to roll into a place and be like, so, like, I want this access, you know, I want to go to the guy's house and I want to videotape him getting in his car and this and that. That presents
That's
challenges in itself.
Them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So there's challenges in that too that I've definitely battled this year. It's harder than I thought it was going to be because I'm like, oh, you know, the Knicks are this way. So, like, how hard can this team be?
Right.
But it presents its own challenges in itself for sure.
Has there been a favorite moment or favorite game that you've seen?
Yeah, I'd have to say, and, like, they're going to get mad at me because these are, like, it's like blasphemy, they're rivals. Seattle and Portland. My favorite place to go to a game for sure is Portland because I started there.
I was going
to
ask you to pick, but I was like, maybe I won't
no,
do
I started, it. I started there. It was the first place I ever went. I had no idea what to expect, so maybe that shock value, shock factor is still there. And my favorite moment, though, would have to be the Seattle supporters. They're known to be very passionate, tough. They don't like, a lot of supporter groups don't welcome the media because they feel they're being exploited. You know, you're getting put on ESPN, you're getting put on Fox, you're getting put on MLSsoccer.com. But, you know, and we're racking in the advertising money, like the broadcast partners are, or the website. But, you know, they have a feeling sometimes that they're being exploited. And I can understand that. So I was scared, and it was a challenge to go into Seattle because they are known to be, like, arguably the most passionate supporters in MLS.
Yeah.
And I had the guy in Seattle when he came to New York, like, take me out to lunch and thank me and tell me what a great experience it had been for us to come and feature them.
Gosh.
So that part was nice because it was a battle for months, you know, to try to feature a group that feels a certain way. And I understand both sides of it 100%.
Right. So, Jill, you like numbers, so I did some homework. So
yeah, let's hear
it. In 2015, every regular season MLS game was aired for the first time in history.
Correct. And that went from, so that's 340 games.
Yeah.
That went from, like, 95 in a year.
Yeah.
In 2014, 95 games were televised to 340.
Right. And so then in 2015, the Women's World Cup generated $40 million in ad revenue for Fox, which is more than double than projections, and it outperforms the Stanley Cup Final, the World Series, and the NBA Finals. So all of these factors, expansion facilities, youth, safety, gender, affordability, these are, like, the reasons they're lifting MLS up and the people. I mean, really, it sounds like the people are the driving force.
Yeah,
I think so. And something interesting about that, too, is that, you know, Fox and ESPN every Sunday, it's called Soccer Sunday, feature a matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. Over 34 weeks of regular season, Sundays, you're talking, you know, NFL's on other networks.
There's a lot of competition.
There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's on Sundays. And in two networks, you know, FS1 and one of an ESPN partner, ESPN or ESPN2, always pick up a game. And that's big. And now the playoffs are here and every game is on ESPN or Fox.
It's been really great for people looking for alternative broadcasting options.
Yeah. People who are, or people
don't
want to
watch football. Yeah, exactly.
Anymore. And we talk about football all the time and the numbers are down. Like, people are raving and ranting right now about the NFL's numbers. And is it because people are getting hurt? Is it because the product on the field is not good? Or maybe it's because other sports are pulling in those fans who are a little bit lost.
Yeah, because really now you can watch Red Zone on your phone and look at whatever your fantasy team is doing
screen.
And watch a couple soccer games.
Yeah.
And it's great.
It's
I've
great.
Been doing it. It's
great
wonderful.
For, the guys who deserve a little bit more attention and aren't quite getting it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the conference championship.
Yes.
On November 22nd.
Yes.
So, Jill, I just want you to break it all down. Four teams.
I'll try.
Four teams. Tell us some
5 seconds.
Points.
Go.
What? Yes. Why do people need to tune into this?
So I think it also helps to understand the MLS playoffs because I didn't always admittedly so.
Please, yeah, share.
So this We're is honest. How it all starts. After 34 weeks. That's the regular season.
Yes.
That's long. That goes from the first week of March until mid to end October.
Yeah.
It's really long.
Yeah.
Then playoffs start, and that's 2 months in itself. Now there's been a lot of hype with the last day of the regular season. It's called Decision Day. And this year, for the first time, every single team played at the same time. And I was covering the Western.
So like baseball. Baseball's last day.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's That's just cool. nuts.
Yeah.
Same thing. You could put the little counter at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Western Conference, I was out in the West for that. And what was it? Oh, God. There was, so six teams from each side make the playoffs. And all but, two were decided in the West. Four were open. Four teams were playing for three spots. There we go. Okay. There we go.
That makes sense.
Four teams were playing for three spots on Decision Day.
Okay.
And so, you've set it up like that and you're hoping, but it could be blown open. The East was much more decided, but the West wasn't. And it was so fun. It was so exciting. I was in Vancouver for that. Portland, the defending champions, were playing in Vancouver, and they got blown out. They got killed.
Wow.
So that's the other thing about MLS I enjoy, the parity in the league. Just because you were the defending champs last year does not even mean that you're making the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that now brings
that evens it out. That gives other fan bases and cities a chance to support.
Similar to the NFL, I suppose. Yeah. So that brings me to like the format. So now we're in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference championships. Four teams are left, and here's why I think that they're so interesting. I'm again biased. I've covered the West now the whole playoffs, but in the West you have two teams that are like the ultimate comeback stories that are vying for a spot in MLS Cup.
Okay.
So Seattle has made the playoffs all 8 years.
Sorry.
Well, this year, they were left for dead in July, fired their head coach, worst team, one of the worst teams in the league. I think second or not, if not the last in the Western Conference come end of July. So now you're looking 3 months, we have to make the playoffs. Well, they win a few games, they draw a few games, and they make the playoffs.
Oh, my God.
Now here they are, and they're in the Western Conference championship. You know, like the ultimate success story.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So you got Seattle and they're playing Colorado.
Okay.
Colorado has not made the playoffs in 2 years. In fact, they've finished like at the bottom of the league for the past 2 years.
Okay.
This year they come in, same coach, but they kind of have like a nice culture change and they almost finished with the best record in the league. So you got these two teams playing each other that like are both playing for something so special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big ultimate comeback stories in the West. And then in the East, it's the first time that either Canadian club has made it as far as they have. It's Toronto and Montreal.
Canadian teams.
Yes.
Which is fantastic.
Yes. And already, as we know, with like the NHL,
right.
Huge rivalries between Montreal and Toronto.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's very cool to see, I think, an MLS team kind of picking up the reins of the playoffs because, you know, the Maple Leafs and Canadiens don't really meet in the playoffs anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's been 40 years. So it's really cool to kind of see now, like, soccer picking up that rivalry and keeping that going.
Awesome.
That's great.
So what are you going to be doing during the playoffs?
You know, I'm actually waiting for that email. I'm either going to the West or the East. I'm thinking it's the East this time.
Okay.
Which is interesting. I've always done the West. So I'm not complaining about going to Canada. Yeah, we'll go twice.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Because it's they have a first leg and a second leg.
Okay.
Which it's an interesting playoff. It's an interesting playoff format. Again, another thing I didn't understand until I really started covering it. It's I say best of two because I'm so used to best of three, best of five, best of seven.
Yeah,
it's a two-leg series. And basically the team with the most goals wins. So you could lose, for example, the game I was at last week. Seattle lost that game, but they won on the fact aggregate goals. You know, they had outscored their opponent 4-2 through the series.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting part. It's, for us baseball people, it's best of two.
Yeah.
I like that. We'll convert the terms.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Awesome. I mean, we've learned a lot. We've learned more than I thought we were going to learn. And Jill, you're fantastic. And
oh, no.
So great for
being
here.
I hope that
here.
All made sense.
It all made sense.
It absolutely did. Yes.
Of course. So you're going to be maybe in Canada.
I'm thinking Canada. Yeah, there's a break right now for international play. For example, the U.S.-Mexico play on Friday in
That's
the World
right.
Cup qualifier.
Yeah.
So they break because they don't want to lose their big stars, you know.
That makes sense.
Tim Howard from Colorado. Yeah, you know, you need Tim Howard for your playoff run.
Yeah,
so
certainly.
That kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being with us.
Sure. Thank you guys so much for having
me. Yeah, thank you. This is great.
You guys are awesome.
Jared Goff is still not starting for the 3-5 LA Rams, which is hard for me to say. The LA Rams. Welcome to Trender Trash. I'm Danny Wexelman, Ashley Chavez, with special guest Jill Sakovitz.
Yay!
Thanks for being here, Jill.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We are throwing you into the fire. So
I know I'm scared.
Yeah. Well, we'll be kind. Don't worry. Okay. So the Rams, the LA Rams, 3-5. Case Keenum not getting the job done. And everyone is up in arms. But Jared Goff has not been given the chance to start. Should Jeff Fisher throw him in and let him go? Jill, I want to hear from you first.
I think yes. I know Ashley's all no, so. But I think yes, because I think that, like you said, you know, you're getting thrown into the fire. I think it's good. I think it's a good learning experience. Why not? They don't need to be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And I think I read last night that 5 rookie quarterbacks have started this year. So, like, he was the top pick. Why can't he start?
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to trash this because I don't believe in rookie quarterbacks starting. I think they should get a year at least on the sidelines learning this new game, because it is a brand new game. You know, it's completely different. So this way you have this your first rounder preserved and ready to go next year. I mean, no offense to Case Keenum, but Rams, you should just keep losing and then build your offensive line when the draft comes, because they have a terrible one. And you're just going to murder that poor child. So I think they shouldn't play him. I think Jeff Fisher is doing a good job with that, with what he has. And I think the LA fans need to cool it.
This is the San Francisco fans supporting the LA fans.
Yes, I'm telling them to cool it. Yeah. Because they need to not, while Case Keenum is playing, do not chant, "We want Goff." Yeah. Like, that's the rudest, worst thing you could possibly do, because that throws your entire team off. So, good job. You did it.
I think, however, though, it's more that Jeff Fisher's scared. Because, like, either way, if he puts him in, he loses. Like, let's say he goes in and he does great. Then it's like, well, why wasn't this guy playing?
Right.
Let's say he goes in there and he stinks. Then it's like, well, why'd we draft him?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's more scared of, like, the backlash.
Jill, you literally said exactly what I wanted to say. So I'm going to trash
this. I read your notes.
No, fine. I'm kidding. These were right in
just
my
kidding.
Notes. No, it's so true. So I agree that you should give the guy a year to grow. But where does he do that? In the practice squad? I mean, like, it's really hard. I feel like these guys, some guys are ready and some guys aren't. And it makes me feel like, just throw him in. They're already, give him a chance. Just give him a game to prove himself. What is that going to hurt?
You're
3-5.
Maybe if you've got a garbage time situation, you can put him in there and get him, like,
but it
some
is garbage
kind of reps.
Time.
Well,
I mean,
I
know
garbage
every
time,
game
all
is garbage
the time.
Time. Let's give him a little bit of credit. When they're getting absolutely obliterated in the fourth quarter. Or maybe they're winning somehow. Then, put him in there. Maybe give him a couple, like, maybe a series or two. But I don't know.
Well, Jeff Fisher, we'll wait to see what you decide to do on bated breath. Moving on. Trend or trash. It's free agent season. It is hot stove.
Hot stove.
Big deal. Yoenis Cespedes, Dexter Fowler, both outfielders, both primed to probably make a lot of money. Where are they going? We don't know. But trend or trash, Yoenis Cespedes being more valuable than world champion Dexter Fowler. Ash?
Who said that?
I want to know. What do you think?
I want to know who said that.
I just want to know.
I think
I said that. I decided that.
I'm going to trash it.
Okay.
Dexter Fowler is, like, light years ahead of Yoenis Cespedes, I think. Cubs were the best team in baseball, and they were so much better with him leading off. So that just shows you how valuable he is. Also, he's a great outfielder. And he did a great job on SNL. So he's just all around a good guy.
He's a great human.
Yeah.
SNL,
I would
know
love
hard
to have
beat
a
SNL.
Measurement. That's
to
an
beat.
Actual thing. That's a measurement, guys. I mean, I would love to have him on my team. I think he's just an all around great player. Yoenis Cespedes is pretty one dimensional. Cannot play outfield to save his life. Absolutely cannot. But he can crank a homer every once in a while. So I see the value in that. If your team is looking for something like that, yes, I get it. But most teams these days are doing well with small ball, as the playoffs have shown us. So
great point.
I think you need someone like Fowler.
Jill?
Value, I think Cespedes, because the Cubs are awesome. But I think the Mets absolutely need Cespedes.
Do I? Yes, I think they should.
So I think value-wise, I think Cespedes is more valuable to his team than Fowler.
Okay. That's
I get
a good
that.
Point.
I get that. Yeah,
that
makes sense. I get that, yeah.
If you could choose one or the other, though.
You could pick one on your
who
team.
Who would you choose?
I'd pick Cespedes. I'm going to stick
with you're going to stick with your
Cespedes.
Guy.
You're a Yankees
I like
fan.
That.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
I think I just
home run girl.
Admittedly know more about Yoenis Cespedes than I do Dexter Fowler.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so for our numbers friend, Jill, I'm going to throw a few out. So Cespedes had 31 home runs this year. Fowler had 13. Cespedes had 134 weighted runs created plus Mike Petriello. That's for you. So that means that he was 34% above the average, which is 100. Fowler had 129, so not too different. And then Fowler had 4.7 wins above replacement, and Cespedes had 3.2. So, and so for measuring six for that, eight is like MVP. Mike Trout is like 9.2 war.
So no one will ever touch that.
No, right. No one will touch Trout. So I'm going to say based on the fact that Fowler does a lot, and I really feel like Cespedes is kind of a selfish player. I just feel like everything that he has done in his career, I just see Fowler like overall being more successful. Yeah, 31 home runs is great. And the Mets need him, but I see Fowler being more valuable to a team than Cespedes.
I guess the reason I stick up for Cespedes a little bit is because, and not to use cliches, but he can play in New York. I mean, you've seen guys come in and
great
can't.
Point. Yeah.
And
that is, yeah.
With the Mets, you know, the Mets and Yankees I cover a lot more, so I'm just more, I know a little more there. Yeah. But, like, you look at a guy like Jay Bruce, and he was like crushing all these crazy records, and leading in RBIs when he came to the Mets?
Yeah. He gets in those slumps, when he came, though. You change his environment, he slumps for days.
But you, so bad, if right? you're valuable, you can't like Cespedes come in. And,
yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, that does help his value.
All right, we're switching gears, moving to the NHL. Thank you, Rena, for letting us know that the Maple Leafs practiced in the dark.
Love it.
They practiced in the dark after losing to the Kings 7-0. And this was the head coach's decision. And Jill, I feel like you have something burning to say. Trend or trash, the decision to practice in the dark to teach them a lesson?
Trend. It should be a trend. I think everyone should
team should do that.
Well, the first thing I thought when Marina told us that was like, that sounds like Mike Babcock.
Yes.
That sounds like their coach. And I'm bringing up Mike Babcock for Tony Loughman, who's probably the biggest Babcock fan out there. But I think it's great. You know, it sounds a little dangerous, but everyone, I'm sure, you know.
They're professional.
Sometimes on the ice, though, at like morning skates and training, that's a soccer thing. Practice. The coaching staff don't have helmets on, but like the players always do. So I just hope the coach set their helmets on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Fair point.
That's really my only qualm with it.
Ash,
I am going to trend this as well. I think it is hilarious and fantastic, and I love this kind of crazy punishment. I think it's great. I don't know how you could even practice in the dark. Yeah. I want to like see it. I guess you can't
see it.
I want to be there for it and hear it, I guess. So I'm very curious about that. I don't know how often people do this. I feel like this is...
Not often.
Not, yeah.
Usually I've never heard running, of it. Usually you're running, like, suicides or running stairs or, you know, staying late after practice.
But not in the dark.
Not in the dark. I'm trending this one because I hope somebody was wearing, like, night vision goggles and was watching all of it happen and, like, seeing all the...
Well, then that would be a fun experience.
No, someone on the outside, on the ice. So, and man, just, like, throw the rule book out the window. Let's be unconventional. Let's teach these guys who've been doing this game for a really long time who probably have very scheduled days, and let's throw something at them that they aren't expecting. I love it.
I think with a team like the Maple Leafs, you could just try anything at this point.
Yeah.
You know, bring in a new coach. I think he makes like something nuts, like $50 million. Yeah. Like he makes some crazy salary. And I think he's I think the highest paid coach
person
in the NHL.
Like yeah. higher than a player.
Yeah, maybe he signed a $50 million contract. But anyway, I think why not? Because the Maple Leafs have been so disappointing for so long. Like, just turn the lights off and see what happens.
Yeah, so they can turn them back on, right?
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, so a few Gold Glove snubs I want to bring up. Alex Gordon got snubbed over Brett Gardner, who earned his first Gold Glove. So any, like, burning feelings about this? I personally, I'm not trashing Brett Gardner or his play, but I think that Alex Gordon is much better and deserved that glove.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Alex Gordon is certainly more fun to watch. Alex Gordon was out, though, for a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
And the Yankees really...
Well, we're going to get back to only being out.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I feel like the Yankees needed someone to come through for them this season, and it was Brett Gardner most of the time.
Okay.
So he got a little bit more attention.
Fair point.
So I understand. I get it.
Joe?
I think Brett Gardner maybe... a few years ago, but like now he just doesn't
Doesn't do
nothing
it for
dynamic
you.
For me anymore. The way Gordon is
surprising, like, oh man, no, he's you're getting doing up in your age job. And he's doing his job still. Yeah, I know.
Okay, so we're gonna someone who did miss a lot of time, Kevin Kiermaier, he earned the Gold Glove over a couple people, but Kevin Pillar in particular, I thought, deserved it over him. Not only with his bat, but I mean, like, the guy, listen, Kiermaier is all over the place. We were talking about him earlier. Like, his eyes are great. That's awesome. That helps you see the ball. So that's good. But Kevin Pillar is equally as much there. I had to say it. Kevin Pillar is equally as much there, and he played the whole season.
Yeah.
Kiermaier missed a lot of the season.
I think Pillar is my favorite center fielder to watch. That guy probably flies.
It's
like
a snub.
Really flies.
I think
and
it's
just
a snub.
Holds it in. No one knows.
So
I think that's a snub as well. I'm going to say Jill. Snub.
Trash.
You guys are convincing.
Trash and
well,
snub,
I
see?
Know. You don't have to trash.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Can you white flag it?
I'm going to white flag it.
We'll
okay,
give it to you.
Okay, yeah.
That's all right. And the last one, Buster Posey. I know this is not, the conversation will end right now. Buster
right.
Posey, I can't even believe it's his first Gold Glove. That's mind-blowing to me. He got it over Yadier Molina, who had won 8 in a row. Obviously.
That's why.
Putting up our hands here, but I mean, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's a snub. I think what I was more interested was that it was first.
Yeah.
Because
well,
of Yadi.
It is absolutely because of Yadi, because yeah. Yadi is such a fantastic defensive catcher.
Yeah.
But just wasn't this year.
Wasn't
and
this year.
He's getting older,
yeah.
And Buster is getting better defensively.
Yeah.
The torch is being passed, and there's
yeah.
nothing wrong with that. Like
no.
you said, he would have had it before had yeah. Yadier Molina not existed.
Yeah. Right? It's really interesting, like, to – I can only imagine how that felt for him. And I know, like, that he probably respects Yadi so much.
Oh, yeah.
And now,
yeah.
like, he has the chance to be that person. So
yeah.
that's – so I really
Another
I was like,
thing in
this
the
is my
case.
Roundabout way of congratulating Buster Posey.
Yeah. You did a good job.
I'm proud of you. I tried really hard.
All
okay.
except for him. Thank you
yes.
so much. Thank
On
you.
On his behalf.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
so we have to talk about it, but then we're never going to probably talk about it again. Trend or Trash, the mannequin – challenge. We're not even gonna do it and show you what it is. You don't even need to know.
You hate this too much.
Trash.
Going,
yeah. Trash.
Trash.
All right. Moving on.
I hate the mannequin challenge.
Great.
I mostly hate all the challenges.
All of the challenges. Except for the ALS.
Well, yeah,
actually,
unless it has an actual meaning.
It made
yeah.
a difference.
Yeah.
Okay, so NFL celebrations. This has been like all over the place. Hot topics. The NFL is fining guys left and right for their excessive celebrating on the field. Sports on Earth, Terrence Moore had a great article about Billy Johnson, Billy White Shoes Johnson. And basically, Billy Johnson was like the originator of the celebrations. And he said if he were playing today, he would not be doing what these guys are doing. He would want to be more established. So I want to know, Trend or Trash, these excessive celebrations, have we gone too far? Is it out of control?
I'm going to – well, here's my problem. I don't think it's going too far. I don't think it's taking anything out of the game.
Okay.
I mean, when Jimmy Graham dunks on the post,
yeah,
that's amazing, and it takes 2 seconds.
Right.
Because he's crazy tall,
yes.
and it works out for him. But why are we fining him $15,000 because he did a two-second celebration
yeah.
that harmed literally no person? It just got everyone pumped up,
mm-hmm.
got your team pumped up, got your fans pumped up, even got opponents like kind of like, okay, I'll kill that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like
right.
everyone gets pumped up. It's great for the game. And, of course, we can't have Antonio Brown doing his little, like, booty dance
right.
For 15 minutes. But also, if he does it for 2 seconds, who cares? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I like it. I don't like in that article how they – about how he said that I would wait to see how, like, my role in this game
right.
or where
being
I am,
established as a player.
This and that, whatever. And then mentioned someone like Antonio Brown who is just a,
mm-hmm.
a killer. He's a stunner.
He
like, he's
established.
so good at what
yeah.
he does. He should be able to, like, let loose a little bit. If you're a terrible player – and you should not be celebrating it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's to each his own. I don't know. I'm fine with it.
I think it totally depends on every single person out there. I think
Case by case.
I think if it's your first ever touchdown, you should celebrate.
Yeah.
Do I think it's very cool when a guy's very humble and it's his first touchdown and he does it business as usual?
Yeah.
That's almost cooler in a way
I
to
know,
me.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I... if anyone loves a good touchdown celebration more than I do. I love to watch it. I think it adds a great aspect to the game. But I do think at the end of the day, like, you're a professional and you're out there doing your job. And if you're a subpar player and you score and, like, you haven't in 5 games and you probably should have.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't be celebrating too
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
yeah.
I have to admit, you know, with all the rules with the NFL this year, my favorite touchdown came in, like, the second or third week of the season when that guy put it down like a robot.
Yes, that was our favorite. We talked about that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
He was kind of mocking. I think he was definitely trolling.
He's like trolling it. And to me, that was funny. It doesn't always need to be over the top in this. No. It's more in like the message and this and that. Then again, like Chad Ochocinco / Johnson.
Whatever your name is.
I used to love, I to this day will just go on YouTube and watch his top 10. So like with that being said, I love to watch it. The shock factor's there. It's fun. But I think these guys being professionals that, you know, you need to take into account, like, have you been doing your job this season?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly. a great point. Yeah. And Billy Johnson, was the
doing
first.
His job.
Yeah, he was doing his job. Yeah. And he was the first Chad Johnson. You know, he was, you know, Chad Johnson is doing what he did. So there's two things. One, I totally agree. Act like you've been there. Like, if this is what, if this is your livelihood and you are supposed to be doing this, then do it. But also in the same token, I feel like the NFL has been slapping guys left and right with fines, and they've been dealing with so many sad things. There's so many bad things. The press, I feel bad for their PR people. But, like, give them the chance to show their personality, to be proud of what they did. Touchdowns, maybe the numbers are going down and guys aren't catching them as much. And so this is their chance to be like, hell yeah, like, I did it. But in the same token, act like you've been there before and maybe, you know, do it in a more nonchalant way that kind of like trolls it a little bit. But then, you know you did it and you can walk away and get back to your job.
Yeah.
So I definitely see it both ways. So that's it for Trend or Trash. I think, Jill, you did great.
Yes.
I would give you like a 9.5 out of 10. Yeah.
They're just being nice.
We're honest. Okay. Yeah. We would trend you.
And you gave me a white flag, so thank you for that.
We did all get one.
The mulligan, the white flag. We gave you one.
I used two one time in a show. So
I use it a lot because Gemma and Ashley are usually like duking it out, and so I throw my flag. Yeah.
Well, you guys were a blast. It's nice to have a conversation with two such smart ladies. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. We will definitely be talking to you very soon because obviously we've got to talk about the conference championships.
Yes.
November 22nd, we've got Seattle versus Colorado and Montreal versus Toronto.
Yeah.
And the storylines, if you were listening, are fantastic. So we're definitely going to catch up and see what happens then. Veterans Day is on Friday. We've got a podcast up on Sports on Earth featuring David Vobora, a former pro football player turned business owner supporting Wounded Warriors.
So inspiring.
So great. And then Carrie Miller, who lost her legs in a car accident while on active duty. She turned into a Paralympic gold medalist in sitting volleyball, so please check that
out. Also so inspiring.
So inspiring.
So much inspiration.
Yeah, to all the veterans out there. And then college basketball also kicks off on Friday with a bazillion games. Can you believe it? Hot stove season is lighting up. There's just a lot of things going on. Gemma, we'll see you next week. But otherwise, Jill, we are so appreciative of you being here. You are a rock star.
No.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. Thank you for listening.
We'll catch you next time.
Now the 2-2. Well hit, down the left field line.